Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I welcome you to call. I'd love to talk to you about whatever's on your mind. Cyrus, I have a serious question for you.
Your serious questions are not usually very serious. So
this is serious.
Okay, I'm listening.
It's about as serious as it gets.
Okay.
Have you ever made a $31.4 billion profit in any given fiscal year? Do you want me to repeat that?
Yeah, can you repeat that for me?
Okay, serious question. Have you ever made a profit of $31.4 billion in any given fiscal year?
Patrick, I think it's pretty safe to say that if you added up all of the money I have ever made or seen or been a part of, it hasn't
or
come
read about.
Or read about. Right. I can't even wrap my head around that many zeros.
Yeah. So is that a no?
It's a no. Yeah. It's a hard
not
no.
Even once.
Hard no. Not once.
Not even once you've made $31.4 billion.
No matter how much I've tried to will it into being, it has not happened yet.
This is the year I'm going to make $31.4 billion. It's going to happen. I just know it. Well, it did happen for a certain young man named Bill Gates last year. Did you hear about this?
What?
Well, he's already like, you know, Mr. Moneybag, so it's not as though for him.
They say the first billion's the hardest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm here to tell you, it's really hard. It's so hard, it's not happening. But for Mr. Bill Gates, I mean, 31.4 billion, it's like, you know, you get that call from your accountant, you're eating dinner. Oh, hey, check it out. You made 31.4. Oh, really? Okay. What's for dessert? That's how I picture that kind
must
of.
Must be nice.
I guess, but Jesus had a lot of things to say about the dangers of wealth that is not well superintended. Anyway, here's the deal. Pfizer, they announced day before yesterday profits of $31.4 billion. Now, the reason Bill Gates is involved in this is because he's a big, 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 you know, guy behind the vaccines. Mm-hmm. So Pfizer is the one who pocketed that $31.4 billion. Now, that was on sales of $100.3 billion. This is in the vaccines. And you can just fill in the blank, my friend shouting that it's not a vaccine. Sales from its COVID-19 vaccine and Paxlovid used to treat COVID-19 totaled $56 billion, more than half the vaccine maker's annual revenue. And in this article, it breaks down who some of these investors were. Bill Gates is like at the top of the list. And so he made a massive profit on the vaccine. Interesting.
Who would have thunk it?
I know. It's just like, yeah, who would have thought that there was that kind of money to be made or that people would even be interested in making money? I mean, after all, the whole point was just to reach herd immunity.
Right. It was to make sure everyone was healthy and safe.
Mm-hmm. And why would you cheapen it with profits and things like that?
And remember, in the beginning, the vaccines, if you got the vaccine, you would not get COVID.
That's what we were told.
It was a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
Yeah, it's really weird how it didn't turn out that way. But just here's the thing. Pfizer and Moderna have announced that they're going to quadruple the price of the COVID-19 vaccines because, don't you know, they still want you to get them. And they're going to go up to $110 to $130 per dose when the government stops paying for it. So right now, the government's paying for it. And if you had gone in and gotten the jab in the last 2 years, so that was paid for courtesy of Uncle Sam. It's not going to be that way anymore. Because I don't know if you heard the news, but the the crisis is going to officially be over on May the 1st. Did you know that?
May
the
1st.
You could set your watch.
Cool. Good.
Yeah. So it's not over yet.
No, no. But finally, on this date.
It will be over, we're told by Uncle Sam. It'll be over
on May the 1st. Well, COVID's pretty smart because I guess that it would be able to know a date that it's no longer, you know, a bad thing, or it's gone. It's out mm-hmm. of the house on this date because it knew that it wasn't welcome in restaurants if you're sitting down.
Or on airplanes if you're sipping a beverage.
That's right. And it knew it wasn't welcome in Home Depot. So it's a very yeah. smart virus.
Or Black Lives Matter protests. Bro. Where nobody, you know,
I see your masks or your anything. Protests. Yeah.
Mostly peaceful protests, as they're called.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
Well, this is interesting. And for those who want the nitty-gritty, the article gets into numbers. So one little detail that I thought was interesting is that Bill Gates reaped massive profits from impeccably timed sale of Pfizer stock. A review of the Securities and Exchange Commission filings found the Gates Foundation downsized its BioNTech holdings by 86% from 1,038,674 shares to 148,674 shares over the third quarter of 2021. That was their best performing quarter. The foundation had purchased the shares in September of 2019, just months before the pandemic was announced. Huh. That's odd.
Sure is.
To buy 1,038,674 shares of the vaccine thing before the pandemic was announced? How does that work? And they bought it at, they bought those shares at $18.10 a share. Seems like a lot of money. But when the foundation sold the shares, guess what? They sold the shares that they purchased at $18.10 a share months before the pandemic was even announced. They were able to sell those shares at an average price of $300 per share. So the Gates Foundation, they, as far, you know, part of that gigantic, you know, what was it? I want to give the exact number here. So the massive $31.4 billion profits across the board. The Gates Foundation, they made, I'm not against anybody making money, but there's some oddities about this story, so I want to get back to that spot. So the Gates Foundation made $242 million by selling those shares, and they sold an additional 2 million shares prior to the third quarter of 2021 and another 1.4 million shares of CureVac, a German-based mRNA company, and they made another $50 million there. So it's adding up. It's a lot of sweet moolah, as they say. So I just thought that would be interesting for people to know. You know, these seemingly, amazingly insightful sales and purchases of stock at just the right moment.
Right.
Now, there's another related detail, and I had it here a moment ago. I want to get to it here. Yeah, here we go. This is a massive peer review study on masks that was done by, and I had a chance to kind of skim through the study itself. It's very long, so I wasn't able to read all of it, but I was able to skim through it and look at the abstract and the findings and, you know, what were they looking for and all that. But this massive peer review mask study shows scientifically little to no difference in preventing COVID by wearing masks. Now that that would have been, you know, enough to get you deplatformed from Twitter or Facebook if you said that.
Got lots of people deplatformed.
Mm-hmm. So little tidbit here. So the study published by the peer-reviewed journal Cochrane Database of Systematic Reviews is described as the strongest science to date refuting the basis for mask mandates worldwide. The CDC still recommends masking in areas with high rates of transmission, fewer than 4% of U.S. counties, along with indoor masking in areas with medium rates of transmission. I don't see anybody wearing masks anywhere anymore. Anywhere.
Oh, I mean, you're not spending a lot of time in Southern California. Well, that's true. All over.
That's true. Well, the article does point out that masks are still, you know, they still are pushing them hard in Democratic strongholds such as New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Washington, and California. That's according to an article in the Daily Mail. Boston Public Schools denied its temporary masking protocol in January was a mandate, following a public letter against the policy by student Enrique Abud Everetes, if I said his name correctly. So it's interesting to note how sort of quietly slipping into the background are these peer-reviewed scientific studies that are saying what some people had been saying all along, and that is this is an exaggerated precaution that's not necessary. Remember back in the bad old days when back when the churches were opened again and you had to go to mass wearing a mask and you had to do all the social distancing and all the stuff that they said had to be done. Okay, I mean, I trust the science. I like to see what the science says. And now the science in this massive peer-reviewed study is saying that it really didn't seem to matter a whole lot.
It's almost like there was an agenda. But who could have? Who could have been?
Who would benefit from that?
Brought to you by Pfizer. CBS Health Watch, sponsored by Pfizer. Anderson Cooper 360.
Oh yeah.
Brought to you by Pfizer.
ABC News Nightline.
Nothing to see here, folks. Nothing to see. Go about your. Put on your masks. Go about your business, please.
CNN
Tonight.
Be scared,
America.
Brought to you by Pfizer. Early start. Brought to you by Pfizer. Friday night on Aaron Burnett Out Front. Brought to you by Pfizer. This week with George Stephanopoulos is brought to you by Pfizer.
I don't know, but I'm sensing a pattern here.
It's amazing.
I'm sensing a pattern. Are you sensing a pattern?
I am seeing a pattern. I feel like Neo in the Matrix, and I definitely see a pattern.
Yeah, there's something going on here. Well, I just want to bring it to your attention, and if you're interested, Cyrus will post the links to those articles. Now, the one article that I was referencing a moment ago has embedded within it the links to the study, which is quite long. If you want to, you know, put on your scientific thinking cap and look at that, that's what I did as part of my preparation to talk about it. There's a lot there, and the article will link you to these various things so you can go deeper if you're interested.
I'll get these posted as quick as I can.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. 888-914-9149. Let's get over to Phil now in Anaheim, California.
Hey, Phil? Phil? Phil, I thought that was you.
Good morning. Thank you for
I apologize for Cyrus this morning. That's all. He's just having fun. He's just a young guy.
I was just in stitches right now, so it's all right. My question is, you know, I heard you talking about Adam and Eve earlier, and I've always had a question in the back of my mind. If we are, if God allows Satan to tempt us only, if Satan can tempt us only as far as God will allow, why did God allow Satan to tempt Adam and Eve in the first place? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, I know. And but we're back to that problem of evil again. Why? I mean, okay, so as a father, if I wanted my kids to be safe, I wouldn't willfully allow a poisonous snake, to come into the house. That's how I think as a father, as a human being. You'd do the same thing, right? You wouldn't permit something if you could stop it from happening. Well, obviously, God can stop these things from happening. And he does love us. So that leads us to this question then, is that why did God permit this? And I don't have the answer. I have what I think are parts of the answer. But ultimately, it seems to me that it's because God chose this way for Adam and Eve to be tested. They had to have some kind of a test. And the test involved being told, don't do this, and if you do this, you're going to have really bad consequences. And then the devil says, well, did God really tell you that? So they had to exercise their free will and to be tested so that they would choose. And God, of course, knew what would happen. It wasn't like he was waiting for them to pass or fail the test. He already knew, but for themselves. And then to your question, I mean, think about this plan of salvation that from all eternity God had willed first of all, the happiness and holiness of the human race, but knowing that Adam and Eve would fall. He didn't cause them to fall, but he knew that they would fall. And so the incarnation is waiting in the background. Jesus Christ, true God and true man, the best thing that ever happened to human beings ever or ever will happen. And so God had a plan that would bring good, so much more good, out of something terrible. I think that's where the answer lies. That when we say, why would God allow it? Because from his perspective, by allowing it, and even though he knows the negative things that would happen, there's some gigantically bigger good thing that will happen as a result of it. I think that's the answer, ultimately.
Yeah, that's trippy. I gotta meditate on that one, you know. It's always kind of been in the back of my mind, you know. And you've just given me a few more clues, a test. And I've always thought, ever since, you know, I was a child, that existing had something to do with a test, you know. But I mm-hmm. never know why, of course. But I think I got to start there and see where my mind leads me next, you know.
Exactly. I'm the same way. I mean, the process of association is fascinating, because as you ponder this, it will lead to something else. And there's a lot to be gained from really meditating upon these things. You might like that book that I mentioned earlier in the beginning, written by the former Joseph Ratzinger, Pope Benedict XVI. It's very enlightening, I thought.
Yeah, I'm going to write that down for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, good talking to you, Phil. Appreciate the call. Let's go now to, is it Caitlin? I think it's Caitlin in Orlando, Florida, or Caitlin. Which is it?
Caitlin.
Caitlin. Okay. Thank you, Caitlin. Yes. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. So my question is, my husband and I practice natural family planning. We have two kids.
Okay.
And I guess my question is it sinful for us to kind of want to be done with children for our family, for what I think is kind of selfish reasons, like, for example, financially wanting to be able to send our kids to private school, wanting mm-hmm. to be able to take, you know, a vacation once a year. Is that sinful?
Well, I could ask a couple questions. I don't want to be nosy, but I mean, are you young? I mean, are you in your 20s or 30s, or are you older, or is age
I'm
a factor?
I'm in my mid-30s.
Mid-30s, okay.
I'm in my mid-30s,
So all other things being equal, the likelihood of you having more childbearing years ahead of you seems pretty good, right? Like you,
yes.
At least for, okay. Yep. Well, the reason I asked that question is because one of those reasons that a couple might see as a reasonable reason is because as the wife gets into her early 40s, the likelihood of birth defects and other problems goes up scientifically. Mm-hmm. So if that's not really in the cards right now for you, and you feel that your income level is about where it needs to be to take care of the children you already have, it's not for me to say whether it would be sinful, but one thing would be sinful. Now, if you're practicing NFP, you already know this, but maybe for the benefit of people who are listening who might not know it, it would, of course, be sinful if you said, okay, basta, no more kids, and we're going to go on the pill now or use some other form of birth control. That clearly would be sinful. But in your case, if you're simply fasting from this good in marriage during the fertile time of the month, in itself, there's no sin there. The real question would be, as you're praying and pondering this, is are you completely opposed to the possibility that God might bless you with another child? And if so, that's where I think really only you could make that determination. You know, our reason for not wanting God to have a chance to bless us with another child, is our reason for wanting to do this, is it a shallow reason? Is it a noble reason? Is it a reasonable reason? You know, those are the kind of questions that you and your husband would have to ask to say, what is really driving this desire not to have more children? Now, if it were a health issue, or you were in the middle of a place in war, or there was some economic crisis or some other thing like that, sure, you could say, well, we have a reasonable reason for wanting to avoid conception going forward. But if it's just because we want more money, or just because we want to buy a boat, or just because we want, you know, those are the questions where you'd have to say, is this the right reason or a worthy reason? And if you reach the conclusion that this really isn't a sufficient reason to just fast from this indefinitely so that we won't ever have any more children, I guess I would say that could verge into the sinful category, you know, where it's placing an emphasis or choosing of a lower good instead of a higher good. Now, it may be, of course, that God has no more children to bless you with, or he doesn't plan to bless you with more children. It might be that he does. I've heard, Caitlin, from any number of people who have told me, you know, we didn't want any more kids, and God changed our hearts, and now we have one or two or three or four more kids, and we can't imagine ever living without them. And had they gone down the road of preventing that in some way, even if it was NFP, they never would have had those kids. And for them, it's unthinkable that they should not have those kids because they love them so much. So I'm sure these are all things that you've pondered, but I can't easily say, yes, it would be a sin, or no, it wouldn't be a sin. I think the motives and the circumstances are so crucial to this that you'd have to really analyze those, as I said.
Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
You're welcome. Once again, I hope I didn't overanswer your question, but I think it's such an important one, and I appreciate you asking it. Thank you. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with more of The Patrick Madrid Show. The number to call, 888-914-9149. And yes, I do have more of your emails. In fact, you'll love this. I had two or three people in the last week separately ask me to do more emails. So, okay, I'll give the people what they want right after this. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code PATRICK for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
This is one time where television really fails to capture the true excitement of a large squirrel predicting the weather.
And put your little hand in mine.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
I'm hearing the same song over and over again.
That's weird.
Yeah. I heard tell that today's Groundhog Day again.
It is. Yep, he saw his shadow. So I think we have six more years of winter.
You know, I was in the town. It's called Woodstock, Illinois. I was
okay,
there.
Okay, stop.
I actually saw it. That's where they filmed. Did I ever tell you about that?
Now you're
they
doing filmed it to the movie. Me. No, there? This is my joke to you. You don't get to
the
do
house.
This to me. You don't get to do this to me.
And
I
that
do this
you
to
know
you.
That you remember where he steps off the curb and he steps into the water, where he punches out Ned Ryerson.
Nope,
that's there. There's actually a plaque there where the hole was in the movie. I never told you this.
Do you ever have deja vu, Mrs. Lancaster?
I don't think so, but I could check with the kitchen.
All right. Well, two can play at this game.
Okay. You win this round. You win
I
this
turned
round.
It back on you.
The war is not over.
Oh, I know. I can't wait to see what's next. 888-914-9149. Let's call, let's go over to Eve now, calling from New York. Good morning, Eve.
Hi, good morning. Hi, Patrick. Calling Hi. Just to give you an update. I called you December 5, I remember, regarding my daughter, you know, having a relationship with a Mormon. And, you know, I just want to share because what happened after that is that I joined you and Father with the rosary December 8th. Uh-huh. And she was home and listening. And then she got intrigued. So Saturday, she ran and her usual, you know, station is not available. You know, the someone is Spotify is using. So she listened to Relevant Radio, and it so happened that, you know, the session when I asked the question, that's the recording that she heard. And then she came back after the run, and she asked me, "Mom, did you call that?" What? I didn't call. It's Saturday. No, I listened. This is you.
Funny. Oh,
wow.
So your call asking about her, she actually heard it on replay. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, wow. That's correct. Wow. So we were talking and, you know, crying. And then I told her this must be, you know, God's message, you know, because, you know, this is who would tell that she will listen. She got intrigued after the rosary, right? That, I should listen to Relevant Radio. And then, So I think it's the prompt of the Holy Spirit. So I just want to, you know, share that.
Amazing.
Truly this is God, you know, working through different means. And I'm not, you know, 100% can tell her, but, you know, it's God's way. And she did.
What was it you and I talked about when you called me in December? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, sure. What I talk about is that what can I do for, I mean, my daughter is a Catholic, and then she have an early, you know, relationship with a non-Catholic, specifically a Mormon. And you suggested that look at this reading, how far they are, and discourage her on proceeding because, you know, it is something, you know, not advisable to continue to be hurt. So that was the
So what
the
happened
topic.
There? Did they continue dating?
They separated. So they discuss and they discuss about their faith. They're still friends. They're working on it, but I think they have a good conversation. Unfortunately, it happened during, you know, the break, the Christmas break. It was not the very best of time, but I think it resulted to, you know, at least set the expectation that both of them at this time, probably no one wants to convert, and they want to share, you know, with someone probably that can share the faith. It's really a mature, you know, I told them that, wow, that's great. You never know. But so now they switch to being, you know, enriching just their friendship, knowing that, you know,
this is
something that they want to pursue with someone with their faith. So, but it's early, but I just want to share that. That's great. You know, amazing that, you know, really through Relevant Radio, you know, you can see how God is working.
I love it. And I'm glad you took time to share that with me, Eve. That's an interesting kind of completing of the circle. So yeah, is your daughter now, does she understand why it would be so tremendously disjointed for her to marry a Mormon in terms of the two very different ways of understanding God? Did that sink into her mind?
Yeah, I believe she's still in the process of doing that. And now that she's more going deep by, you know, joining the CIY by Father Mike, so she'll get more, you know, full understanding. The fact.
Did she ever read those articles that I had referenced, the ones on Catholics, the differences between Catholic and Mormon? Okay, good. I'm glad she had a chance to read those.
As well.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, these are things that God does in the background, and we just, you know, we just have to sit back and see what God's doing, you know?
Right, yeah.
Well, God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Eve. Great talking to you. And please tell your daughter I'm really happy to hear that she's thinking things through. That's great.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye. 888-914-9149. How about Rosalba in Paris, California? I know Paris, California rather well, as a matter of fact, although it's been a long time since I've been there. I know that's not very impressive, but welcome, Rosalba.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning. Are you on the 15 freeway right now? It sounds like it.
Actually, I am. I'm actually on my way to San Marcos. my family and I have a small business. My husband and I work our 9-to-5 job, but then we have a small little business. We sell tacos on a night market.
What's your street address for the taco stand? I'm just kidding.
Maria,
you don't.
I would.
I like tacos.
I would. I would pay a visit, but that's okay. I know you wanted to call and talk about something, so sorry to get in your way.
Yeah. No, but definitely, when you're in the area, my business name is Rosie's Tacos.
Man, I tell you what, you got my attention in a big way, but now I'm distracted thinking about tacos.
Oh.
I'm going to try to focus.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Patrick. Well, thank you. First of all, it's the first time on the phone with you, which is, I am a little nervous.
That's okay.
But thank you. Thank you guys for everything.
You're welcome.
I love listening to you. I love listening to Drew,
who?
Father Rocky. You guys are amazing. You guys have touched my life, and you guys have no idea how.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. The reason I called is because you're welcome. It's because I wanted to get some advice. We're Catholic, obviously. We grew up Catholic. I mean, our parents would never take us to church, but they would say, "Oh, we're Catholic." But we got baptized. I did my first communion, confirmation, all that. I have three kids. My oldest daughter, she's 17.
Okay.
In the past, we've gone to Christian church because we have family members that are Christian. We would go just to be with our family, to go to the church. Yeah, so I'm sure you know what I mean. But so we never said, "Oh, we're gonna change to to be a Christian." But my daughter
and by Christian. Can I just interrupt? By Christian, do you mean Protestant, like Baptist, or non-denominational? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Okay. Because you know, of course, that the Catholic Church is the original Christian church.
I know. Okay. I know that. I know that. But the Protestants that don't believe in our Mother Mary, and you know.
Right.
So we went to a church on Christmas Day because my sister-in-law and her husband were here. They're Christian, and we went to a Christian church. And then my daughter says at the end of the day, she was talking to my husband and was saying, "Hey, I think I want to become a Christian now. I don't feel like I want to be Catholic anymore." And I was like, "What?" I felt like confused. And I was like, "I don't want to talk to you about that right now." Like I was just confused. And I said, "We're going to talk about this another day."
Mm-hmm. So, how old is she? She's 17.
She's 17. And, right now, after she told us that, I told her, "You know what? I feel like you're confused and you really have to pray to our Lord and, ask him for more wisdom and for you to for clarity, you know, because I feel you're confused." So after she told us that, she hasn't been taking communion when we go to church. She always goes to mass with us every Sunday. But
I'm going to jump in if I can. I think I know the problem and how you can begin taking steps to correct it. Okay, the first thing is. What you described, it sounds to me like you allowed her to go to this non-denominational church occasionally or every so often or maybe more frequently. Is that right? So she was going to that church and experiencing that?
Oh, we just went that one time for Christmas. And then way back when she was in first grade, we would go probably once a month. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that wasn't like a recurring thing, you know?
I see. Okay. So her interaction with the people in that world, it only happened that one time, or is she like close friends with people who are in that world and she spends time with them?
No.
Is that part of it? No.
No. Actually the day that we went there, we didn't even, none of us had any, like any talks with any other people around there. We just said our good mornings, God bless you. That's yeah. all we did. She actually, both of my oldest kids, her including, and my 13-year-old, they're in a charter school, and it's strictly online. So they honestly, they don't have any friends. They don't go out. So, yeah, I don't understand, honestly.
That helps me understand. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe this is partly coming from something online. Could be YouTube videos, could be websites or apps that might be kind of drawing her in that direction. So I'm happy to hear that it wasn't like she was going on a regular basis, because that's a classic example of how Catholics wind up leaving the church. It's a classic scenario, but I'm glad to hear that that wasn't what was going on. So let me write you a prescription. Do you have I realize you're driving. Is there somebody who could jot down a couple of things for you?
No, I'm actually by myself here.
Okay. Well, I have a couple recommendations that I think will help you, and they'll help her clarify her thinking. You need to be proactive here, and I'm really glad you called, because there's some steps you can take that will help her. Just telling her to be, how did you put it, you know, to seek wisdom and to pray, that's good, but that's not enough. There's more that needs to be done. So what I would recommend, number one, is go on YouTube and look up Scott Hahn's conversion story or conversion testimony. Have you heard of Scott Hahn?
No, I have not.
All right. Well, what you can do is when you get to the taco stand, about an hour after the show is over, Cyrus will have the show loaded up on the website, relevantradio.com/Patrick. So you can listen in hour two to this part of the program, and everything that I'm about to tell you, you'll be able to write it down then, because you'll hear it. Okay. So Dr. Scott Hahn he's been a friend of mine for a long time, since the late 90s, or late 80s, I guess. And he was an evangelical Protestant minister, and he was very anti-Catholic. Not that your daughter's anti-Catholic, but there are people in that world who are. And he was opposed to the Catholic Church and felt that Catholics should leave the Catholic Church and become quote-unquote Christians. And he himself became Catholic. And so in this one-hour presentation that he gave at my parish church in Riverside, California at that time, St. Francis de Sales Catholic Church in Riverside, California, it was the summer of 1989, and he told his conversion story in front of an audience of about 35, 40 people, because nobody knew who he was. They had never heard of him before. But the story was intriguing. So in the space of 1 hour, he will share with your daughter why not only that she should remain Catholic, but why he became Catholic. He left that world of evangelical Protestantism and became Catholic. And in that 1 hour presentation, he'll explain to her. And that will be a big help for her, kind of like a booster shot. Now, I would also recommend a book that I happen to have edited, but this book has some amazing, I think, miraculous stories in it, and it's called Surprised by Truth. Surprised by Truth. It has a red cover. It was published in 1994. Get that particular one. There are four different volumes in the series. You want the first volume, Surprised by Truth.
Okay.
Yeah, 1994. It has a red cover now. Didn't used to, but now it does. Give her that book and just say, you know, here are 11 people who left that world of evangelical Protestantism and became Catholic. You should read their stories. Before you think about leaving the Catholic Church, you should read their stories, because they went in the opposite direction. And they knew that world very, very well, and they wanted to become Catholic. So I would make sure that you get the book for her. I mean, you could buy a copy for pennies online. Get a used copy if you want. I'm not trying to make money off selling a book or anything. But get that book for her. And I have a feeling that with listening to Scott Hahn and reading that book, it's going to really give her a different outlook on this and show her why she should be Catholic, because that's the church that Christ established. And it has all of those things that you know that she needs, the sacraments and such, the Mass. And it sometimes takes an outside voice to make that clear. And I know that Scott Hahn can do that for her. And I know that the people whose stories are in this book can do that for her. So that's my prescription.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Patrick. I really needed to hear this. I've been just thinking about it.
Yes. Well, you're a good mom, and I'm happy that your daughter has you as her mom. You care about her, and you want to do the right thing. So maybe call me back in a month or so and let me know what her reaction to this was. I'd love to hear that, and we'll be praying for her. Thank you. I'll be right back.
Good morning,
Patrick. It sounds like you're on a speakerphone. I'm having a hard time hearing you. Mr. Telephone Man, there's something wrong with my line. Just everybody, please, no speakerphones, no Bluetooth. It becomes difficult to hear. Mr. Telephone Man. We have to mainline on this program so that everything sounds good. One more time, no speakerphones,
no speakerphones,
no Bluetooth. No Bluetooth.
Mr. Man answering.
Then put your little
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. The number is 888-914-9149. Cyrus, if ever you want to see the place where Groundhog Day was filmed, it's actually in Illinois, Woodstock, Illinois.
Oh, Woodstock, Illinois, you say?
Uh-huh. Left. It's kind of up and to the left. It's northwest of Chicago. Easy drive. As a matter of fact, it's an easy drive from where you live, and you can see everything that you'd see in the movies, like the house, the boarding house where Bill Murray stays. You've seen the movie, right?
What movie?
Groundhog Day.
Oh, never even heard of it.
You should go to Woodstock, Illinois, because that's where they filmed this movie. And you can see the house where he's looking down the street. And there's a scene in the movie, it happens over and over and over and over again, where he's stepping off a sidewalk and he steps into the slushy,
watch out
deep
for that first
pothole.
Step, it's in juicy.
Yeah. And that pothole's not there anymore, but there is a plaque there from where the movie, because the movie was filmed in that town.
Ned!
And you can see everything.
Ryerson!
Yeah, you really should check it out. Woodstock,
you might
Illinois.
Be okay.
Yeah.
No, probably not now.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to Richard now in Bloomfield, New Jersey. Hi, Richard.
Oh, how you doing? Okay, I think this whole question, and I think there's a question of temptation. For instance, why did God allow the snake in the garden, etc.? The answer to me is completely explained in Job. And okay. To put it in a nutshell, God allows Satan to tempt us. But God is, and to basically torture us like he did to Job, but he is limited to how far he can go. So God will test us, as the old saying goes, will not test us beyond our capability. I believe that's true, but he could take us really to the edge like he did with Job. So I think the temptation of Job was similar to Adam and Eve as it is for all of us. We are subject to Satan's temptations, but God is in control. And it's that simple, I think, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that's all I have to say. Did I cover it pretty good?
I think you did a masterful job.
Yeah, because I think that's the answer. Why does God... Now, of course, the other question, knowing that Eve was going to fail, as he knows everything, why did he go ahead and do it? Well, that's another question. And as you explained many times, God is not in time as we are.
Mm-hmm, right.
And just my explanation is that we still have free will, and we are still responsible for our choices. The fact that God already knows it because he doesn't exist in our time doesn't change the fact that it's still free will.
Right.
And just because he knows it, he doesn't intervene. And otherwise, we wouldn't have free will. We wouldn't have freedom if he intervened in everything. And that's about it. My phone seems to be conking out, so...
All right, John. Well, Richard, thank you. Duly noted. Well said. Thank you for that. Let's go to Jovan now in Los Angeles. Is it Giovanni or Jovan?
My name is Jovan.
Welcome, Jovan.
Yes, sir. So my question was, I've never been told the answer to this. Okay. If Jesus, when Jesus was crucified by the Romans, who did the Romans worship before Jesus?
Okay, they had, of course, the Roman Empire was pagan, and so they had many, many different gods that they worshipped. Not real gods, obviously, but Zeus, Apollo, Athena, Ceres, you know, all the various Greek and Roman gods, and even the so-called gods of areas that they conquered in war, they very often would just adopt those gods. So they had many different gods that they would worship. They were polytheistic, obviously. And it wasn't until the 4th century, so the early 300s, that the Roman Empire officially went from being pagan to worshiping Jesus as a state religion. So they embraced the Catholic Church in the early 4th century. But they were pagan for a long time before that, many gods. Does that answer your question?
It was two questions. So you said they started worshiping Jesus then, right, after that?
Right. So the Emperor Constantine is the one who, he saw a vision in the sky that we assume that what it was is the sign of the two Greek letters that look to us like an X and a P. That's actually the Kairo in Greek. And those would be the first two letters of the word Christ in Greek. And so he had a conversion experience, even though he wasn't baptized until nearly the time that he died. But he had a conversion experience, and he became Christian without being baptized. And he stopped the persecutions of the church that had intermittently happened before then. And then eventually he said, I am now becoming a Christian, and the Roman Empire is going to become Christian. And many people did become Christian, Catholic specifically. And it was in the early 300s when that happened.
Now, my last thing is, so you know how the Europeans came to America and conquered, you know, took over and had children here. So yeah. When they conquered Jerusalem, they had children and children. So who are the children now of the Romans that killed Christ?
Well, that's a really good question.
It's an easy answer. So I'm sure they didn't leave. Like they didn't leave when they conquered America. They didn't leave. So when they conquered Jerusalem, I'm pretty sure they stayed. So at least some. So the children of them, you know, who they might be?
I have some thoughts on that, yeah. And what's nice is we live in an era of DNA research where we can actually see, you know, where did these people originally come from? What are the ancestral backgrounds to them? So keep in mind that some of the Romans might have stayed because they would have garrisoned troops there. There were troops there in the Antonian Fortress right by the temple at the time of Christ. So there were Romans there. And I have no doubt that they were, you know, molesting some of the women who were there while they were there. But after the destruction of Jerusalem, keep in mind, Jovan, that Jerusalem was utterly destroyed. There was really nothing there to stay for. And the Romans probably didn't want to stay there in the middle of the Judean desert. Well, it's up in the mountains, but you get the idea. They probably wanted to go back home when their military service was done, go back to their people and their lands. I'm sure some Romans might have lingered, but there really wasn't much there to enjoy because they had utterly destroyed it. So
they're going to leave the motherland? Thank you.
You're talking about Rome? Is that what you mean?
No, Jerusalem.
Well, that that wouldn't have been the motherland for the Romans. Their motherland was.
Remember, they started worshiping though. And
yeah, but that wasn't for another 300 years, though. That wouldn't happen for another 300 years.
Okay. Well, I'm just curious because I see a lot of people who resemble the Romans. Color there, mm-hmm. So you know I'm pretty sure, you know, the children of children, you know.
There's some descendants. I'm sure there are. Yeah.
Right. So that's all. Oh, one last thing before I go.
Okay.
I never understood why people wear the cross. because I would say that's the murder weapon of Christ. Like you wouldn't wear somebody shot your son with a 38. You wouldn't wear the gun around your neck, right?
Well, no, but my son is not the son of God, and somebody murdering my son would not bring about the salvation of those who believe in Jesus. So the cross is different in his case. You're right, it is a murder weapon. But the purpose or the meaning of the cross, it by far transcends a gun or a knife or however else somebody might have been murdered. So in this case, it's appropriate to be able to remember that. They didn't use the cross. The early Catholics didn't use the cross in the first few centuries. It was only after maybe three or four centuries that you begin to see it. But St. Paul talks about this. He says in 1 Corinthians 2, he says, I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. And he says in 1 Corinthians 1, verse 18 and forward, he says, for the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. It pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles. So it is true that if it were just an ordinary death by an ordinary person, right, we wouldn't use the gun symbol or the knife symbol. But because of what Jesus did on the cross, it's a sign of victory. That's why we use it.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you answering my questions. You seem very fair with your answers.
Well, I appreciate that, Jovan. Thank you. Hope you'll call me back another time. That's a great way to wrap up hour two, and we have a whole other hour coming up right after this. So you don't have to fasten your seatbelts. You are free to move about the cabin right now. And if you'd like to upgrade to being on the air, give us a call, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We'll get you on the air with your comment or question. If you want to send me an email, just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and click on connect, and you can send me one there. Thank you. I'll be right back.
Yes, that's true.